Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, take two. How are you now? Just when you think everything is going fantastically. Broadcasting from the studios, the Theory of Things studios in Castlereagh Street, Sydney, Australia. It is the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast, Season 8, Episode 3. Remember, if it's talked about enough, it's a thing. This show is brought to you by the Australian Mutual Funds Exchange. I am James Whelan, Investment Manager at VFS Group. I'm a white male, aged 41, almost 42. I am wearing a navy blue suit. Although the jacket is off, I've got a white shirt with the sleeves rolled up. I'm joined by Heath Moss of HLM Investment Group. Heath, how are you now?
Very well, thank you. And I hope everyone else is well out there. Lovely day here in Adelaide, getting a little bit cooler now, getting that real autumn weather that, we've been expecting.
It is starting to switch around a little bit. Also broadcasting from, just think about where we are, Gadigal Land over here, which is fantastic. So, in the Euro Nation. Now, keep in mind also that anything on this that you think is advice is general in nature. If you want to talk to someone who actually knows what they're talking about. Look them up on the phone book or talk to Heath or myself and see how you go. This episode is being recorded. It's 11:18 on the 28th of April, 2023. Right. Now, we just had last night the apps. This is going to be a quick one, guys, real quick, in and out real quick, and then we can get on with the beers. We've just had the best night since, like, January or something overnight. Cranking. Meta doing all the heavy lifting last night. The irony and the switch around that as being that short idea last year was my absolute best trade that I ever made. And this everything is just completely switched around, and it's all going upside, and it's all thanks to the artificial intelligence units.
Yeah, yeah, and they ticked over 3 billion active users on all their platforms for the first time. Yeah, look, there is a lot of runway there. I mean, they've got their problems with advertising and whatnot. But you know, I think you look at that WhatsApp sort of messaging service that we use, and over 1 billion people use. There's a lot of scope there. I think if you use the WeChat. Model over in China where basically that app does everything.
They do everything through the app. That's right.
There's no reason why Meta, I keep on going to call them Facebook. But
I'm not calling them Meta. I think it's stupid.
They can't do the same. So, look, I mean, whilst I'm not in Meta itself, I think they've still got a lot of problems ahead of them. I'd rather be in something like a Microsoft or a Google or something along those lines.
Yeah, I know.
The turnaround story is there, and they are trading on cheap enough multiples to make them attractive.
Yeah, cheap enough multiples. I mean, I was looking at what where the market was. I actually had a little chart up in front of me a second ago. Hold, please. Just talking about how stretched the market actually is for it. And I sort of had some things here. Let's see, rice shortage, heat. Yes, it's very hot. Inflows, tech valuations. Now, this is a real big stretch of this of a chart to put tech valuations. So this is PE ratios.
Basket.
Yeah, yeah. The S&P 500 Information Technology Index. And that was looking at it's 25 times. But it's talking about when it was up around that 28 times, it was really, really stretched. Yep. I mean, interest rates were zero. So this person was drawing a line to saying, you know what, if it's at 25 times, you need rates to be like 300 basis points lower than where they are in the States. Now, okay, that was interesting. I mean, just because you put two things on a chart doesn't make it right. But you do look at the historic average of where where tech has actually been with regards to its PE ratio, and it's usually anywhere between 15 and 20. During the COVID days, it was well up towards 30. But
yes, it was. Yeah,
I think it is a touch stretched. I think I was listening to UBS. Listening to UBS the other day, they were saying that we think. Look, based on the, if you do the numbers on this one, you need earnings to be up 30% from where they are right now to be able to meet these expectations. And that's just not going to happen.
No, No. And listening to the Amazon call this morning or snippets of it, there are signs of stress there. Whilst they beat the bottom line and revenues, the beating, and this is the same with Alltech. Alltech have reported better than expected earnings this year, this quarter, but it's all on revised down earnings. I mean, these earnings estimates have all been revised down quite a bit over the last 6 to 9 months. So, you know, they're lower hurdles to jump over. So Amazon were saying themselves their free cash flow is a lot better at the moment because of the supply chains opening up. The inventory management has been a lot easier in that. They're not having to stock a lot more inventory, you know, because their supply chains are clogged up. But in terms of AWS, which is, you know, obviously their most profitable division, they're seeing profits down 21%. Quarter versus the same quarter last year. Revenue is only up 16% as well. So there is a lot of slowing going on there. And the most concerning thing, because, you know, Amazon aftermarket popped quite heavily on the back of this earnings report. And then the earnings call came in half an hour later and it dropped like a stone on the back of them saying April numbers in terms of revenue growth for AWS were 500 basis points lower than the Q1 average. So they're seeing quite a significant slowdown in April. And I've just been going through and looking at a few notes. It seems the same is happening across the board in the US. We've seen McDonald's say they're seeing a decreased units per transaction globally, and especially in the US, in April. Google noted that advertising revenue was also slowing in April. Was it Pepsi and Coke also noted the recent slowdown? People are paying, willing to pay less. People are not willing to pay the higher prices now as they were at the start of the cycle when the inflation really took off. People are more resilient. They're going in with a set price in mind, and if it's not at that set price, they're not paying it. So it really seems after Q1 in the US, things have started to really slow down. And I think people are using that SVB collapse in March as a sort of the pivot point for the consumer. They're saying it really rocked the consumer confidence, and that's where things have started to really slow down. Because we saw GDP come in the US last night a lot lower than expected, plus 1.1% on Q1 versus 1.9% expected. But
Heath just dropped out. Heath, you there? Over. Heath, you've just dropped out. What you're about to say is that consumer spending was actually showing
quite strong.
Yeah, it's actually quite strong.
I lost
you there for a sec, but you're right.
Oh, sorry. It seems as if though that slowdown has started. And I went. Sorry to ramble on a bit, but I did go back and have a look at the when this all happened in 2007, 2008, in the GFC, and how the US consumer responded. And as I've said before, it's okay until it's not, and the US consumer dropped like a stone all of a sudden.
Yeah,
it was strong, it was consistent, it was solid, retail sales were solid, and then as soon as the economy turned over, you saw those plummet, you know, -4%, -7%.
It was okay
until it wasn't, and that's what I'd expect, the same thing to happen in the second quarter and third quarter in the US this year.
It's not outside the realm of being, and that's the thing about the consumer, that it's, there's, anyway, look, we can go into that all day. Mate, I've been looking at May, you know, the stupid sell in May, go away sort of thing that everyone talks about.
Oh, we love it, don't we?
The rhyming season is something else. Now, looking at some charts here, my old mate Ryan Dietrich, this is the sound of me tapping in because we don't really research this at all and it's just us slapping it together. I'm kidding, we actually research a lot, but my computer just restarted while I was just before I started. Sell in May. So now he's got some good stats about the S&P 500 going back to 1950. The 6 months we are going into are the worst possible six-month combo that you can have for the US market. Still, on average, it's up 1.7% at least. So that's mm-hmm. what this whole sell in May sort of situation that goes on is not. May traditionally is a little bit weaker. And especially if it's the year before presidential election, which we are, Joe Biden going around again for some reason, it's usually a little bit weaker in this time as well. But usually still, it's historically, it's an okay return that you can get out of it. So don't go nuts. I'm advising clients, and I'm also acting on this too, is just thinning out a small amount of the market and just switching it into bonds. The good thing about this market now is that it's working rationally again.
Yes.
Where
yes.
it's going up, and then you have a situation where, you know what, if I want to get out of the equity market, then you can then switch it into bonds and actually get some sort of a return for a short amount of time. That's the way that it should be, and that's the way that it was before all this nonsense. And when we're back to it, your 60-40 portfolio is fantastic, and you should act accordingly based on that. Now, like I said, it was going to be quick. Anything else that you've got?
No, just to add to that, I've been switching clients into bonds and more defensive style stocks as well. As you said at the top of the market, I mean, at the top of the show, we had, what, a 2% move on the S&P 500 last night. It was the first time since January. I mean,
yeah.
It's been a real dull, cautious market, and we're not used to that
yeah.
after what happened in 2022. So I've been moving a lot more money into the bonds, the USTB, GGOV, AGVT, ETFs on the ASX, which I think are all excellent vehicles for that sort of thing. But, yeah, that's basically – oh, a bit of gold as well. I think gold is acting quite positively here, grabbing some of the gold ETF. I still expect yields and the US dollar to grind down over the year, so that will benefit gold in that time.
Now, I know you're big on lithium. You sent me a note from ANZ, their commodity call. Did you want to speak to it? Because I've got it in front of me.
Look, I think we're at a stage, and I'm not saying, you know, go all in, but look at the stage where lithium is bottoming. Certainly the spot prices in China are down 70% or so, but we're coming to a point where battery producers are having to restock and buy more lithium. And in terms of the cost matrix to produce lithium these days is actually more costly. So, you know, that it's come back to those marginal costs the price has in China as well. And they make up most of obviously what is made in terms of batteries around the world. So I'm seeing that lithium prices are bottoming. We also had news out of Chile during the week, which is one of the world's largest producers and reserve holders of lithium as well.
Yep.
And they're looking to sort of semi-nationalize their lithium industry. They're saying by 2030, everyone who's got a project in Chile, there needs to be some state ownership. They said they'll respect current contracts up until 2027 or something along those lines.
Yep.
But outside of that, they're nationalizing. And that is a concern. That is obviously the sovereign risk you take with some of these countries. And that's going to benefit Australia. And we already saw it, and I think this is part of the reason Albemarle came across and made that bid for Liontown, as they saw the writing on the wall. They're a major producer in Chile and Argentina. And they want to diversify their production mix a little bit more. So I think we're going to see a lot more merger and acquisition stuff, especially with companies here in Australia. We are the largest producer of lithium in the world at the moment. We don't have the reserves that Chile and Argentina do, but we are producing more. So I think the bottom is in there. You can start trickling in some money. I've said it before, I like mineral resources, I like Pilbara resources, especially Pilbara with such large cash holdings they announced this morning of around $2.8 billion. So nice. They'll be on the lookout.
Yep.
And explorers, I like PMT, Patriot Battery Metals, and GL1 Global Resources, which PMT have that very, very large Greenbushes style deposit in Canada. And I think they're both targets. For a takeover as well,
fantastic.
Somewhere down the line. Okay. So yeah, I think the bottom may be in for lithium. Now, if that goes all out the door, if we have a nasty recession, global recession, because you know no one will want to buy anything. But if things sort of amble along like they are, then we should see a turnaround there.
Well, I think the recession's been priced, but if the only way that it would actually be an impact on certain types of markets as if there was an actual huge recession. It's a matter of how deep and how far. One of the things that I've been looking at this week and in my time away at the farm when I was away, just with a bit more time to actually get into some research and do some reading there, was just how hot it's actually it is at the moment and how hot it is going to continue to get. Looking at record temperatures, I mean, there's a rice shortage already that's underway. We're looking at record temperatures through Thailand, Vietnam, Turkmenistan, China is just going crazy, all breaking their records over there. Looking at the daily sea surface temp, which the average is so far above past historic averages that it needs to be respected and it needs to be noticed. We've got the US National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said that they've got an El Nino likeliness at about 62% coming up towards the back end of this year. And you've got our Bureau of Meteorology that have also declared. So in March, La Nina was declared off and El Nino is declared potentially. They've got a 50% chance of it happening by the end of the year. So they both move in sort of different cycles, but they're all sort of related at the same spot. It is going to get hotter. Food is going to be in more scarce supply, but I don't see this as actually impacting the food ETF like I did before, where I was a huge buyer of that and then got out for a very nice profit and actually managed to take profits all the way through. So proud of that food trade. It was incredible. I actually see this one now as relating to water. So I'm having a really good look at a water ETF. The ETF, which I'm looking at, and I know because we've got to have trade ideas, we've got to have something. The one that I'm looking at, I'm not saying I'm charging into it yet, but I'm very, very close to doing it, is the IH2O, the iShares Global Water ETF. Trades over in London. It's just got water. It's investing in companies within the S&P Global Water Index, which contains companies involved in water-related businesses. So it's utilities, infrastructure, equipment, materials, all in the water space, and that's what I'm looking at as being one of those big thematic things that I go into, similar to food, similar to copper, similar to what have we got going on? Anyway, that's the other one. Oh, the FTSE 100 is the other one that I'm into. So they're just these big thematic things that you just hold and sticky. You know, it runs 20-30%, and then when the theme sort of stops being a thing, then you get out of it. So I don't think this food is going to go as well as based on this thing, based on how well it did during La Nina. I think that probably maybe aerospace and defense might be more of a buy on what's ahead actually coming on with this thing. So that's really bad tension. Now, football.
There is a water entitlements vehicle listed on the ASX as well. The Duxton Water. Duxton Water Limited.
Yeah,
DTO.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah, single stock, go nuts on that. I'm really awful with the single stock stuff in this sort of specific things. Because you gold can go up. I'm the guy who buys Newcrest, and then, you know, I'm not saying that I put a curse on stocks, but some companies should pay me to not invest in them. Newcrest will find some way of screwing up, digging gold out of the ground and putting it in a safe, mate.
Anti-marketing sort of fee.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the ETF guy. Stick to what you know. I'm actually the mutual funds guy as well. Don't forget this show is brought to you by the Australian Mutual Funds Exchange. If you want access or exposure to most of the mutual funds around the world, all from one simple platform that you can go and click in and put your login details in and get access and exposure to the Indian funds, direct specific Indian funds, which I've been looking at closely as well, go to amfex.com, put your details in, and start trading away, doing whatever you want to do. It's just so simple. All the feedback that I've had on this thing is absolutely incredibly positive. I really love that they sponsor us, and I really love the work that they've done, built by a few Ukrainian guys that just did an amazing job. So amfex.com, go and check it out. Go and have a look at the funds. Even if you just use it to be able to search through funds and compare things and look at what the holdings are, go nuts, do that. That's a really good way just to do your homework and get your research put into it. Now we can switch over into, all right, football. What have you got? Footy. Now I'm back on track. Jimmy's back.
You are. Well, you're on the board at least.
I'm on the board. Yeah, I know. I've got to run on the board. Mate, you got to get off your duck. Seriously, because I sacked my portfolio manager, sacked my tipster. He's gone.
Yeah.
Thanks for your help. Not. And I got myself back in action, and I backed myself, and I got up, and it was fantastic. I think it was the Broncos beating Parramatta up in Darwin, where we saw all. And g'day to our Darwin listeners as well. We've got a huge population of listeners up there, and that went quite well. Now you first, but I'm back on the board. You had a win as well, so you're like 4-4 or something.
Yeah, just a lazy 4-4.
Double it up, mate. Okay, so this is going to be a combined multi. You and me combined multi, and we'll see how we go.
I've actually got two because one of them's for tonight, and I doubt many will get in there for tonight's game. And that's the Saints to cover the line versus Port, -12.5.
Yep.
I don't think Port will be able to score heavily against the Saints defense and missing a few forwards.
Are they really?
Saints, Todd Marshall's out, and Georgiadis unfortunately didn't use the knee in the SNFL. So they've only got Dixon, and that's basically it in terms of the big forwards. So Saints to cover the line there, and Lions to cover the line versus Freo. I think that's Saturday night up at the Gabba. The Lions are just so hot up there. They play fantastic footy. The Lions 34.5 points, but I think they're going to cover that quite easily.
Okay, not a problem at all. As well.
So they're my two tips for the week.
Mate, not bad at all. Now, I've got my first off, I'm still going against Parramatta, and fans of the show will know that I just, I did well last week, and all my para mates hate when I do this, but look, I just don't think they're a much chop. Now, a bit of risk on the game tonight. I think that the Knights will come close, if not actually win. I'm not happy to take them on completely, but I think that the Knights have got a 6.5 start. That's good enough for me. If you can get 6.5, take it. Because that's a converted try, and so yeah, get on the Knights with the points and bet with your head, not over it. I think that's what you have to say. But anyway, look, that's my tip of the week. I think that the Knights will get up or come close tonight. So take them with the points there at $1.90. Multi it all up in together, myself and Heath, make yourself a bit of money, but probably just keep it sensible. Mate, that's all the time we've got.
Yep, we've got a huge week next week.
Absolutely. What have we got next week? Go.
RBA meeting. Fed that meeting. Guy.
Yeah. Oh, 0% chance that there's going to be a rate hike.
What, here in Australia?
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. That's a given. They're going to hold. Fed looks like 25 basis points is baked in, especially after the strong consumer numbers last night.
And then
then we've got bank earnings here in Australia, NAB, ANZ, Macquarie at the end of the week, retail sales, PMIs across the board, and US jobs to end the week as well. So it's a massive week. Okay. China and Japan are on holiday for half the week as well. So,
Okay, that's
can't get much bigger than that.
Well, of note, just sort of going back on the RBA, and this is the last thing, and then we've actually sort of got to go, is that Gareth Aird from the CBA, who has been picking these things like a dirty nose, is still saying rate hike next week from the RBA, even though the market is absolutely saying it's not going to happen. So there is actually a market to be traded right now on this one. If you believe in Gareth, good friend of the show, go nuts. Rates up another 25 points. If you don't and you go with the market, then so be it, and that's it. I think the market will probably come off a touch. It's a huge call, but he's been Robinson Crusoe on this stuff before. And then all of a sudden, everyone's just like, oh, yeah, I knew that was going to happen. And Gareth was just like, hold the line. He still says that there's enough reason for them to be an increase. I'll tell you what, Philip Lowe would not be able to buy bananas in public.
Oh, mate. If he did this. If he's not already the most hated man in Australia, he would be if that was to happen.
Love's an enemy. All right, mate, that's all the time that we've got.
No worries.
Thanks for joining us, everyone, on this one. Brought to you by whoever. It's produced by whoever. Heath is on Twitter. I'm on Twitter as well. Check out everything else you need to do. And thanks, everyone. And thank you for the sponsorship, Australian Mutual Funds Exchange. It's been amazing. Go and check them out. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.